We are holding on page Pei Dalid in Bava Basra, Ois Ayin Hei. Continuing with Dinim about honest weights and measures and honest business practices. So the Gemara says, turn it up on, we're learning a Braisa. Now, we talked about yesterday that there can be two different ways of measuring out commodities, things like flour or things like that, that you pour into a measuring container and there'll be a heap. One way we said is that you'll sell it with the heap as is. That's, in other words, the local minhag is to do that. That, for example, a container, that a saw, for example, is not placed into a container that holds a saw. The container itself up to the rim will hold less than that. Once you add the heap, then it'll make a full saw. The other way of doing it, we said, is to have it leveled off. If you're going to have it leveled off, then they would use for that purpose a tool called a machak, which means to erase or to level it off. So it would be a stick, basically. You would sweep it along the top of the thing and level off the flour or whatever it is that's heaped up above the rim, and then you complete the sale. So turn it up on. We learn in a brisa. Ein osin es hamachak tzidah echad over the tzidah echad kotzer. You can't make one end of it fatter and the other end of it skinnier. So the point is, Rashbam says the fatter side won't go in as easily into the material over there. So what's going to happen if you have it like that? It's not different widths and different parts. Then, for example, a person is buying, then he'll use the thick end, so that way it removes less from the heap, and that way he ends up getting more for what he's paying. And then when he's selling, then he'll use the narrower side so that it'll sweep off more. So no, it has to be whatever the local minhag is to make their machak, you have to follow that standard along the whole length of it. Now, you also, when you're sweeping off the extra, you shouldn't do it all at once in one big sweep. Then you're giving too much of an advantage to the lekeach, to the buyer, because if you do it quickly, you're not removing the entire heap. You're still leaving some of it because you're doing it very quickly. And then that way, the buyer ends up getting more than he should, and the seller is getting cheated. And you also shouldn't do it a little bit at a time, as Rashbam explains. Let's say you might do a tefach and then pick up the machak and then do it again and another. No, you have to do it all in one sweep, but gently. The other possibility that Rashbam says is that ma'at can also be, for example, you'd go until the middle, you'd start from one end, go until the middle, and then start over from the other side and go to the middle. So you can't do that either, because then you're advantaging the seller and disadvantaging the buyer. Because then you're removing too much, basically. Regarding all these kinds of things, regarding all these kinds of dishonest practices, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says that woe to me if I say these things and woe to me if I don't. Woe to me if I say it, that's a problem. Cheaters may learn from it. They're going to say, hey, you know, I never thought of this idea before. Now I have a new idea. Now I have a new thing in my arsenal of how to cheat my customers or my vendors, as the case may be. The flip side of it is that the actual cheaters, if I don't announce it, may say, well, the Tamid Chachamim don't know what kinds of things we're going to do. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is saying basically, you know, we're kind of stuck. We want to do good for the Jewish people, but one way or the other, I'm going to be in trouble. Marsha points out that, wait a minute, what do you mean Shema Yomer HaRamoyim, that the cheaters may say that Tamar HaChamim are not familiar with? Never mind that, even without that, somebody who, if Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai doesn't announce it, then, for example, people may do these things not realizing that it's going to cause fraud. So shouldn't that be a better reason to say it as well? So therefore, so he's saying that's exactly what the Gemara is going to end up saying, that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai did go and say these things, which is how we have them in the Braisa, because Yeshorim Darche Hashem, Tzadikim Yochubam, this way, Taka, the people who don't know better, who until now might not have realized, you know what, it never occurred to us that doing the machat one end narrow and one end wide, for example, or doing it too fast or too slow is going to be a problem. You know what, now we learn and we'll do the right thing from now on. As far as the Ramayim, we can't really help them. So why Dr. Rav Yochanan Zakkai came up with this? So Anaf Yosef points out that it says that the Gemara mentions, we're going to have it later in this Masechta, that Rav Yochanan Zakkai in particular never talked sichas chulin, never talked common mundane talk in his life. So therefore, he has to be extra careful of what he says. So therefore, he wanted, in order to keep him with that hanhaga, he's going to be extra careful with what he says to make sure that. And then now the question is, what should he say? So now the question is, well, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is saying that either way I'm on the horns of a dilemma, whether I say it or not, I'm going to be in trouble. Well, in the end, did he say these things or did he not? Omer Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchok Omra, he did in fact say them, which is how we have them in the Braisa. Umehai kro Omra, and in fact, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai followed the following pasuk in deciding that the right thing would be to teach these things. I was saying that Amoyim could learn from it that, you know what, this is a good idea. I should try to do this and see if I can get away with it. Fine, but as the pasuk says, ki yeshorim darchei Hashem, the ways of Hashem are straight. Tzadikim yelchubam, the tzadikim will go in them and do the right thing. Ufoshim yekoshlubam, the sinners will stumble in them. Meaning, basically, in other words, fine, you may have that sinners and Rishoyim may learn from this new tactics that they didn't know of before, but you can't help it. The more important thing is to teach it that this way the tzaddikim will know to be careful and not cheat anybody with it. As Maharshal says, this way you might have a person who until now never realized that this would be an issue. Now he'll know not to do it anymore. The fact that Rishoyim, on the other hand, may take advantage of that. He says, listen, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is saying basically, listen, you can't help that. You have the expression the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, for example, when it says in the pasuk Nasa Adam, and Moshe is worried, why are you writing Nasa Adam? The minim are going to have an excuse to say that there's more than one Hashem, and Hashem says you write it, and Misha Roitza Litters, whoever wants to be misled, Yovah be Yitter, then fine, he has an opening to be misled. I'm not going to prevent him, but the person has the Chiruch Hafshis, but well, it's going to be written this way so that the tzaddikim, so that people will learn from it the right lessons. So same way Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is saying over here. Then Yehoyada brings in this connection and a cute drosha on this from a pasuk in Tillim. He brings from an earlier chacham, Rabbi Yonah Ashkenazi. He says you have a pasuk in Tillim, Kapitel Lamed Vav, Ne'um Pesha LaRosha B'Kedav Libi Ein Pachad Alekim LaNegen Einav. The simple meaning of the pasuk is that the Rosha says to himself, says his heart, says to him that there's no Hashem, and therefore he figures he can get away with it. So now this Rabbi Yonah darshins as follows: Ne'um Pesha, should I speak it? The problem is Pesha LaRosha. The problem is it can give an opportunity for the Rosha to do Averis. On the other hand, the care of Levi, should I keep it inside my heart and not say it? And Pachad Alekim LaNeganeinav, then the Rosh is going to think, he's going to have no fear of Hashem, because he's going to think the Chacham are not wise to what he's doing. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai eventually decided the answer to the dilemma is that we should say it, and if the Rishoyim take it the wrong way, that's their problem. So the Ein Yaakov interjects over here, here we have something similar that we find in a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, also about different kinds of things that people can use for cheating purposes. And again, the point is, you have the same kind of thing. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says, Oylim Oymar, Oylim Oymar. And again, of course, as we're saying, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai did eventually decide the right thing is to say it, and this way the tzaddikim will learn from it. Namely, now we have like this. The din is that generally, wooden kalim that don't have a receptacle are generally not makabel tumma. There are certain exceptions, but on the whole, if a wooden kalim can't contain anything inside it, it's not makabel tumma. We learn that from the fact that the pasuk puts wooden kalim together with a sack, and a sack is something that can contain things, and therefore wooden kalim to be makabel tumma has to contain things as well. So now the Mishnah says like this: Knei moznayim, the stick. The rod of a balance scale where you have the two pans hanging from the two ends of it. Vaham machak, or the machak that we were just describing to level off a heap measure. Shayesh behem base kibble matris either one of them, if they have a space, an empty space inside it, in which metal can be placed. So the idea would be like this. Sarkosiv brings, based on the relevant Mephoshim, on the Mishnah and Kalim, that it means. In other words, usually this Knei Maznaim and this Machak would be a solid piece of wood. Instead, a dishonest person would make a hollow in it and then put little pieces of metal in it, or some Mephoshim explain, he would put, in the case of the Knei Maznaim, he would put mercury in it, liquid mercury, and that way he can tilt it, that way he can tilt the mercury or the little pieces of metal to whichever side he wants, and that way make it heavier or lighter, and cheat customers with it that way. So it has a base kibble, it has a place in it that can hold something, which means, therefore, that's Mekabel Truma. And the point is, Mephoshim point out, it means, in other words, even though these are things that are also to do, nevertheless, we don't say that if a person does that, we would say, Botla Daita Itza Kolodim, what he does doesn't count because not what normal people do, therefore it shouldn't be considered a receptacle, and it's not Mekabel Truma. We don't say that. We say, nevertheless, it's Mekabel Truma. Next, continues the Mishnah with some other examples. Vor Esel Sheyesh Bei Beis Kibul Mois, an esel, which is a yoke. Like, for example, you see pictures of the old time water carriers where they would have similar to a balance scale. They would have a piece of wood that he'd hold across his shoulders and have the two pails hanging from either side of it. Where he has a space hollowed out in it for coins, for money. The idea being, in other words, that Akosev explains, suppose, for example, so a Balabas has many workers working for him. He's supposed to pay them, but now what happens is he'll pay this guy. This guy will put the money inside this hollow stick. It can also be like a walking stick or something. He'll put the money inside it and then claim to the Balabas that he didn't get paid. And the Balabas, of course, is not going to think of looking inside the stick, inside this rod for the money, and therefore he's going to pay him again. So therefore, the guy is going to get away with cheating his employer and getting paid twice. So that's an Esel Sheyesh Bei Beis Kibul Mois. In a similar vein, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Shavuos that when Beis Din is Mashbia a person, they have to tell him ahead of time that don't think you're taking the Shavuah based on your own understanding of the Shavuah. The Shavuah that you're taking is going to be Al Das Beis Din Val Das HaMokim. It's based on Beis Din's understanding and Hashem's understanding of the terms of the Shavuah, so don't think you're going to get away with altering the meanings of words or whatever and get away with it. And the Gemara gives an example over there. One time in Rava's Beis Din, there was a guy who was chayav a shvua. So he knew he's guilty, and he didn't want to swear falsely, but he also didn't want to pay the money. So the Gemara tells him there, he had himself made a hollow walking stick. He put the money inside, he put the coins inside the stick. Then when it came time for the shvua in Beis Din, and actually Tosfos points out, before Rava even had a chance to tell him, loyal daltenu, alal daitcha, but right away the guy jumped ahead and was ready to swear, and he quickly says to the other guy, to his Baal Din, please hold on to my stick while I take the shvua, because I need to hold the Sefer Torah. And then he takes the shvua, he takes the Sefer Torah or whatever it is, and says, I already paid you the money. And the other guy is furious, because what do you mean? You didn't pay me the money, you just swore falsely. He banged the stick on the ground, and all the money came falling out. So this guy was exposed as the cheater that he was. So this is the same kind of thing. The Esel Sheyesh Bei Beis Kibul Mois, that a person might do it for that kind of purpose as well, in order to cheat in Beis Din. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. The Kona Shel Oni Sheyesh Bei Beis Kibul Shemen or Mayin. Then you can also have a stick of a poor person that has a little hollow in it for oil or for water. So Akosid brings the explanation that it means, again, he's working for the Balabais, and he's working, let's say, in an olive press, so he'll have the stick will have a little hollow in it, and he'll be able to steal a little oil and put it inside that hollow, and nobody will think he noticed. But Amnon gives a different explanation of it, which is that, for example, you have a poor person is sitting on the street begging, and he's pretending as though he's a Porush. He's not eating and drinking and whatever, or even not, he's sitting and begging, whatever. He's presenting himself to the Olam as a Porush, like he's fasting and whatever. And meanwhile, secretly in his walking stick, he has a little compartment over there for a little bit of water to tide him over. So there's that. And then you have a stick, a walking stick, in which there's a hollow space for a mezuzah or for a pearl. So the idea would be either that it means that he's using it to smuggle those things, the pearl here. So one explanation is it means he wants to smuggle the pearl, so he puts on top of it a mezuzah. This way, even if they do open it up, all they see is the mezuzah and they don't think anything of it. There's Mephoshim will explain that maybe in those times they would have import taxes on mezuzahs. And another explanation is that in the case of the mezuzah, it's not a cheating thing. In the case of the margolis, it's a cheating thing to evade tolls or taxes or import taxes or tariffs or whatever. In the case of the mezuzah, the idea would be that some people would actually carry around a mezuzah in their walking stick for protection. Poskim nowadays, that Eber talks about in a couple of places, and various poskim nowadays, or Moshe and others, talk about whether that taka helps. And we know mezuzah primarily provides protection when it's on the door. Is there any use in carrying it around with you?
So
the Rambam says what you shouldn't do is you shouldn't write things into the mezuzah that are supposed to be for protection. The Rambam writes, you write on the outside of the mezuzah, you write Shin Dalad Yod, and then there's also Akhi Kabbalah, we write the letters Chof, Vav, Zayin, Vav, etc. But the Rambam very sharply says in Hilchos Mezuzah, he says those who think to write in their names a Malachim or Shemus Kedoshim or whatever, then they're making a bizoyin of the mitzvah and they're making it just for protection. No, the mezuzah itself is protective. That's, you have the famous story of Onkelos, that the Eibishter just stands guard outside and we sit inside. So there's this idea. So there are Mephoshim who explain that over here, what it means is people would have a walking stick and they would put a mezuzah inside it as a shtickle protection. It's based on this. For example, you have some people sometimes will keep a mezuzah in the glove compartment of their car. It's based on a similar concept. There's actually another explanation as well. The Gemara tells us in Menachos, that people from from King Munbaz's household, maybe from his soldiers or whatever, they were constantly on the move. They were never in any one place long enough to have a chiyuv of mezuzah on their doors, but they didn't want to do it without a mezuzah altogether, so they would take along like a stick with a mezuzah attached to it, so it should be like at least a zecher for the mitzvah of mezuzah. So some of us will explain that means the same thing over here. A person would make a hollow in his walking stick so that if he's always on the move, at least he has a zecher for mezuzah. Anyway, or margolis, again, where the margolis would be the idea because he's trying to evade taxes or whatever. So in all these things, harelu tmein, all these kinds of things, I'm a kabel truma, because again, if they were pshutei kleiets, if they were flat wooden kalim without a receptacle, they would generally speaking not be makabel truma. But because they have this receptacle, and even though in most or all of these cases it's dishonest to do that, and very much awesome in Atorda to do such a thing, nevertheless the fact is it has a receptacle, and therefore it's makabel truma. I guess one thing you could say of that is sometimes people were more careful about Truma Batara than they were about other areas of Halacha. So maybe then by saying these things are Makabal, and the fact is Halacha is they are Makabal Truma, but maybe the idea was also by publicizing that they're Makabal Truma, also it might dissuade people who want to be careful about Truma Batara from doing these kinds of things. Even if they're not going to be dissuaded by it because it's partially dishonest, they might be at least knowing that now there's more of a chance that there's going to be Truma involved. So for that matter, well, I guess also, let's say you have, imagine, for example, a person has put a stick and it has a hollow in it and becomes tomei. Now he's going to have to go to his local person who has pora aduma ashes and tell him, I need the stick to have pora aduma water sprinkled on it. And the guy is going to say, wait a second, this is a flat stick. What do you need? And he's going to have to fess up that it has a hollow in it. So maybe there's that too, yeah.
Is there a shear to that hollow?
No. Even the tiniest hollow, even the tiniest base kibble is enough to make something be makabel tomei. So Valkulam Amar Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. So like we had in the Gemara just before, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai says in this Mishnah the same kind of thing. Oyliyim Oymar, Oyliyim Lo Yomar. Woe to me if I say, woe to me if I don't. Either way, I'm on the horns of a dilemma because if I don't, like we said before, if I don't say these things, then if I say these things, then people are gonna get new ideas of how to cheat people that they never might have thought of before. And if I don't say them, then the Ramoyim, the cheaters, are gonna think that the Chacham are not wise to what we're doing. And in the end, as the Gemara says before, he said it because you shot him down Hashem. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan lo sasu ovo ba mishpat. The pasuk says you should not do any injustice in judgment. Ba mida ba mishkol ova mesura. In measuring, in weighing, or in mesura, which we're going to see in a second. Mesura has a double meaning. It means liquid measures, and it's also the name of a specific small liquid measure. So don't do anything dishonest in any of those three. By the way, the Torah is calling it mishpat, which implies, in other words, Meforshim point out, I think even Rashi mentions it on the pasuk, that it means that any time you're weighing or measuring, in effect, you're doing a miniature din Torah. You're being at that point a shofet. You're being in a minor way a judge, and the same way as a judge is being very strictly warned in the Torah to be 100% honest in his judgments, the same way any person who's measuring has to be 100% honest, even if it makes a difference of less than a shava pruta, as we're going to go on to say. So, bamida zumadidas karka. When it says bamida, that means to be honest as far as measuring land. It means that, for example, a surveyor, let's say he's dividing up a property between people, he can't measure for one person in the summer and another person in the winter. So Rashbam explains they would use rope. So let's say, for example, you have two people bought a field b'shutfus and now they want to break it up, or two brothers inherited from their father and now they're dividing up the estate. In those times, the usual way of measuring was with ropes. And a rope is going to expand in the winter because it absorbs water, and it's going to shrink in the summer. So therefore, if you measure in different seasons for the different people, it's going to come out dishonest. Rabbi Rashbam brings from Rabbi Hanano another point as well. It's not just the rope. The ground itself shrinks a little bit in the winter and expands in the summertime. Because, you know, sometimes you'll see like the ground cracks when you have the ground cracks because of the dryness during the summer. So therefore, it's slightly larger than the same area during the summer than during the winter. Now, the Rambam seems to accept the first possibility, because the Rambam says, for example, if, let's say, you're measuring using iron chains, which don't change in size between the different seasons, then fine, gezunt d'heit, measure whenever you want. So here we're talking about, by the way, the surveyor himself isn't really gaining from that. Nevertheless, the Torah is warning him to be scrupulously honest with it. If, let's say, Tosfos points out elsewhere in Bava Metzia, if the Yoshim themselves, let's say, were to measure it, and one of them measures, and he measures for himself in the winter, and for the other in the summer, or whatever, then he himself would, of course, be Ovan Gezel, never mind dishonest measures. By the way, the Gemara elsewhere points out, one of the Chachamim, Rav Adam Meshucha, worked as a surveyor, as a professional surveyor doing this kind of thing. So Rav tells him, you have to be careful, even the tiniest extra bit of land that you accidentally give to one person over another, that he could conceivably plant saffron there, which is extremely expensive. Even nowadays, it's worth thousands of dollars per ounce, and therefore, you could potentially be causing him an enormous loss if you make a difference of even a fraction of an inch, of a fraction of an inch wrong. The Rambam, by the way, also mentions in this connection, it means also a din for a surveyor. He has to be familiar with the details of geometry that he needs to do in order to measure things out accurately. You know, it's very easy. Let's say you're measuring out a field and you have it to, you're going to be just dividing it. You have a rectangular square field and you're just going to be dividing it in half. That's easy enough. What if it's irregularly shaped? Then you have to know the relevant formulas to be able to calculate the area. So that's as far as Bamida. Bamishkol, when the Torah tells us you have to be careful with being 100% honest with weighing, shaloyafin mishkoloisa b'melach. That means a person is not allowed to bury his weights in salt. The weights that are made out of stone or whatever materials the Gemara discusses in the Sugya, what you're supposed to make weights out of, so they change weight as little as possible at different times during the year. For example, don't use metal because metal rusts and that causes it to become lighter or heavier. So in a similar vein, though, don't bury them in salt. Rashbam explains salt would make them heavier. Because you bury them in salt, that causes them to absorb more water, and therefore they become heavier. So now you have a weight which says on it that it's a pound, let's say. Now it really weighs 1.1 pounds, let's say. And now when you're buying, then you'd be using it to cheat the vendor. Tosfos says the other way around. Everything else in this brisa is addressed to the vendor, to the seller. Why all of a sudden would we have this that's being addressed to the buyer? So rather, Rabbi Natan says the other way around. Salt causes it to become lighter because it absorbs into it moisture from the weight. and therefore causes it to be lighter than it otherwise would. And brings from the Yerushalmi that says exactly the same thing.
So why is the seller not allowed to do that if he's actually heading to the sale?
So now what we're saying is the seller, for example, so the way it would work in those days, let's say you're a seller, you're a grocer, you're selling, let's say, meat or flour or what have you. So you would put your weights on one side of the scale and then put the commodity on the other side. If you've now made your weights lighter, then you're going to be giving the customer less. Yeah. Now, sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes the buyer would bring his own weight, and that's what Rashbam is explaining, that by putting them in salt, he makes them heavier, and therefore he's going to end up cheating the seller. Yeah. So you're not allowed to do that. In fact, Tosfos points out here and also in Bav Metzia that it means, in other words, as soon as he puts it in salt, then already he's over on the Aveira, even if he never actually uses it. And Bamasura, when it says Bamasura...
It says also regarding heaven that it doesn't even allow to have it in his pocket or something like
that. Yeah, well, that's really going to be the next piece that we're going to say. For example, you're not allowed to have a dishonest weight even if you're using it for an ovich from a miracle line. Yeah, we're going to have that next. Yeah. Yeah. Bamasura, and when the Torah tells us you're not allowed to cheat in Masura, where Masura, again, Masura in general means liquid measures, but it's also the specific name of a small liquid measure, Shaloy Yartiyah. You're not allowed to make it foam. When you pour liquid from one container into another, if you don't do it slowly and carefully, it's going to foam up. And now, for example, now the person who's buying from you is going to think he's getting more when he's getting less. Think of how often, you know, you pour yourself a cup of soda or whatever, and then by the time all the bubbles go away, the thing is only half full. So here it's the same thing. But kavachomer, and now you can make a kavachomer, and Tosfos points out here's the same thing. In other words, also, as soon as he does that, as soon as he makes it foam up, then already he's over on the Saveira, even before he actually pours it out. But kavachomer, and we can make a kavachomer now. Uma mesura, she alef milamed vav velug. A mesura is a small measure. It's 1/36 of a lug. There's a different gear set that some Rishonim have, 1/33. Either way, a lug is approximately a pint, give or take. Let's say, for example, we have a coin set of Avram Chaim Noah, a revius, which is a quarter of a lug, is approximately 3 ounces, give or take. So a lug is approximately 12 ounces. 1/36 of that, then, would be about a third of an ounce. So you think of like a kelishkol will hold 1 ounce. So you're talking a third of that. You're talking like a teaspoon or something, practically. So even that, the pida all of Torah, and yet the Torah is masked even about making it foam up. Now you think about it. If you're going to pour into a masurah measure, and it foams up, how much sahakal is the guy getting defrauded of? The whole thing itself, the whole thing itself holds only a third of a half an ounce. And the foam is going to be even less than that. Hikpida all of Torah, and yet the Torah is makbid that you're not even allowed to do that. Kavachoymer lehin, kavachoymer, if a person is selling, or buying for that matter, a hin, which is 12 lugim, a much larger measure, v'chatzi hin, or shlishes hin, or revias hin, or a half, or a third, or a quarter of a hin, which are, those come up in the various places where menochot, where nesochim are brought with korbanos, but the Gemara actually has, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but the Gemara talks about what kinds of measuring containers and weights and whatnot are you allowed to have. The Gemara makes the point that you can't have ones that are too close together because a person might easily confuse one with the other. But the Gemara says, for example, even though a third of a hin and a quarter of a hin are relatively close together, one is 3 lugim, one is 4, you're allowed to because they had them in the Beis Mikdash, so therefore that's good enough for regular people as well. But let's say, for example, the Gemara establishes, let's say, you can't have one measure that says on it 2.5 lug and another one 3 lug because it's too easy to substitute one for the other and then cheat the other person. He's not going to realize. Anyway, all those, which are any of those, are much more than a masura. The lug, v'chatzi lug, or revias a lug, or a lug, or a half a lug, or a quarter of a lug, v'chatzi toymen, or even a half a toymen. A toymen is, Rashbam says, is 1/8 of a calf, so it would be half a lug. So it's equal to the chatzi lug, and a chatzi toymen then would be equivalent to a revias. V'uchla, or an uchla, which the Gemara later on defines as 1/5 of a lug. So how much more so when a person is measuring out any of those, any of which is much larger than a masura, that he has to be careful not to let it foam up, because if we see the Torah is makbid, even on the foam, in the tiny thing like a masura, how much more so these large measures? So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Osa La'odam Shiyashem Midah Hasera or Yesera B'Sef Beisei. A person is not allowed to keep an overweight measure in his house, one that's under or over the amount that it's supposed to be. V'afilu hi ovet shomei miraglayim. Even if he's using it as a bucket for urine. The problem is, if he has it around his house, then sometimes he might end up measuring with it. Now, Rashbam points out, this is not what the pasuk itself is telling you not to. The pasuk says you can't have derlo ktana. That means when you're planning to measure with them. If it weren't for that, then Rav doesn't need to tell us this. It would be b'seder from the pasuk. So it means that from the point of view of the pasuk, it would be fine to have it as long as you're not actually weighing with it. But Rav Yehuda is telling us in the name of Rav that you're still not allowed to b'pashtos midrabanan. But even if you're using it as an ovet shomei miraglayim, you're going to think, well, then you're not going to measure with it again. But still, a person might rinse it out and clean it out and then use it to measure. So therefore, the only thing you can do is break it. However, omer papa lo yamoren ela ba'asra b'lei chasimi. That applies, though, only in a place where they're not stamped. You have places where people use weights and they don't have any kind of official stamp on them. Aval ba'asra de chasimi. But in a place where they have an official stamp on them, so listen. If a customer comes to the store and he doesn't see the stamp on the thing, he's not going to want to buy using that anyway. So then there would be no problem having one that's not stamped because you can't possibly use it to sell anyway. If he doesn't see the stamp, he won't buy from you who are using that measure. Over Astra Dele Hasimi Nami, even in places where they're not stamped, Loyamar El Deloy Mahandisi. It would also only apply only in places where inspectors don't regularly go around to the stores checking them. Aval Mahandisi, but if they regularly go around, less one bar, then there's no problem with it. Rashbam explains the word mahandasi is an Aramaic word that means to meet up. So like in places where inspectors regularly visit the stores and meet up with the vendors and check their weights and measures, then there wouldn't be a problem if you have an underweight or overweight one because the guy's going to be afraid to because he's afraid he's going to be caught by the inspectors.
In modern Hebrew, it's
engineering. Hadassah actually comes from Arabic, and that shurdish in Arabic means like calculating or measuring or engineering or something like that. So from that it came in Lashon Kodesh, but yeah, in modern Hebrew, yeah. Aval mahandisi lasanba. However, the Gemara says as far as that last one, v'loihi, that's not actually so. That's not actually so. Even if inspectors regularly go around, you're still not allowed to keep an underweight weight. Because it may happen that it's late on Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, and a person is in a hurry, or mikri v'shokel, and he may go ahead and buy even without checking. He may go and buy. So therefore, Rashbam says two possibilities. First of all, it's Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos. Everybody is busy. So the storekeeper may figure he's going to get away with it at that point. Who's going to come inspect his store adapter like that a couple of minutes before Shabbos? And therefore, he may take out an underweight weight and use it and figure that I'm likely to get away with it. The inspectors probably aren't going to come right now. The other possibility, Rashbam says, is the customer himself. I'm in a hurry. I have to get this right before it's almost Shabbos. So therefore, he's not going to pay attention whether this is underweight or not. Now, Ion Yaakov points out on the face of it, then that point the Gemara is saying that should apply to both things. The stamps also, a person at that time, Erev Shabbos, Ben HaShemoshes, may not pay attention to the stamp either. Nevertheless, though, the Rambam and then later Poskim don't talk that way, and they do say that, in fact, stamps are a valid thing. If it's not in a place where they're stamped, if this particular one is not stamped, then you're allowed to keep it. But as far as the second idea of inspectors going around, that doesn't help us, and you have to, and you can't keep it even. And you can't keep it, you would have to break it. Further on, after talking about honest weights and measures and things about prices and so forth, so the Mishnah talks about and then the Gemara expands on it about dinim about prices on commodities. Now we talked about yesterday the machloikas whether you need inspectors to go and enforce prices. But the Mishnah talks about that there are a number of things that there's limits on how much you're allowed to charge for them. Certain things that are necessary for basic survival, such as flour and oil and things like that, there's a limit how much you're allowed to charge for them halacha. And you have dinim also that the Mishnah talks about, for example, how much of them you're allowed to store up. Sometimes people would store produce so that if there are shortages, then they won't be caught short, but also then they would use that as an ability to jack up the prices, because now they're the only ones who have a supply of it. So the Mishnah and the Gemara talk a lot about those dinim of what you're allowed and not allowed to do in that connection. So the Gemara says, turn it up on an Utsre Paris, people who do that, who hoard produce, so that when there's a famine or whatever, they can raise the price, they can open up and store and sell at higher prices. Umalvi Ribis, people who lend at Ribis. And the point is, first of all, Rashbam says we're talking about this is in a city that's mostly Jews. If it's not, then it wouldn't be such an issue. But the point is, in other words, that also Rashbam points out, Bechlal, it's not just when they sell them and they jack up the prices. Then even just the fact that they're cornering the market and buying up as much of that produce as possible itself causes prices to rise, because then you have there's less supply and then the same amount of demand, and that causes prices to rise. So they, umalvi b'ribis, people who lend at ribis, umaktine eifa, people who make the eifa smaller, people who have dishonest weights, like we were just talking about, umaskiye sha'arim, people who raise the prices, aleya makosav oimer, those are the kind of people on which the pasuk says, lemer, the Navi criticizes them, these are the people who say, mosa yavar achodesh, when will the chodesh be over, v'nashbira shever, and we will sell grain. The chodesh can mean, in other words, Rashbam says it means that we're going to wait a month, we're going to wait until a month after the harvest season is over, until everybody has gathered their produce into the house, and then after a month, we're going to jack up the prices. So in other words, Rashbam says if they're just holding it for a month, that's not mafkia sha'arim. But when they're saying we're going to wait until there's shortages, until everybody has their own stored away, and now we're going to open up our store and start charging, then that's what we're describing over here as masa yavar achodesh, the thing we can't wait until one month has passed and we're able to start taking advantage of people. There's different other explanations of masa yavar achodesh, including that achodesh can also mean rosh chodesh. We know that there's a minhag that women don't do malacha rosh chodesh. We find there seems to be evidence, including based on this pasuk, that in the times of the first Beis Hamikdash, men also generally didn't do malacha on rosh chodesh. So therefore, like rosh chodesh, I have no choice but to keep my store closed. But I can't wait till rosh chodesh is over and I can go back to my dishonest practices. Vashabbos, or the person says, when will Shabbos be the niftecha bar, and we'll open up and sell our grain. Rashbam says that Shabbos in this connection means Shemitah. So that's also Otsre Peres, they're hoarding fruit, so that they're hoarding produce, so that during Shemitah, when there's less available, then they'll go and start selling the produce that they stored up from previous years. Here also, Shabbos can mean exactly that. Shabbos doesn't look, we have no choice but to keep our businesses closed on Shabbos, otherwise Beis Din will penalize us, but after Shabbos, we can't wait to get back to what we're doing. And they continue, Lahaktin Eifa. So far we have the Maskiye Sha'arim and the Otsre Peres. Lahaktin Eifa, they say we're gonna make the Eifa smaller, which we just said Maktine Eifa. We're going to make our measures smaller and claim that there's still an Eifa and sell with them. Ulahagdil Shekel, and to make the Shekel bigger, Rashbam says that's the Malve Beribis. It means not we're making the shekel bigger as in we're going to mint larger coins, but we're going to make our shkolim bigger. We're going to lend at ribis and make that now we earn more. We make the amount of shkolim that we have is going to be more. Ola aves moizne mirma, and to make crooked and dishonest the deceitful scales. So this is also the people who change the eifa and sell dishonestly. So, ma kosev achra v'chtiv. And the next pasuk continues, nishba Hashem v'goin Yaakov. Hashem is sworn by the glory, by the pride of Yaakov, meaning by the Beis Hamikdash, im eshgach l'netzach kol ma'aseihem, that if I will, meaning that I will not forget forever what they do. So Hashem is swearing, in other words, that I'm never going to forget and I'm going to punish those people. In particular, Ion Yaakov points out it's usually stealing from the poor people. And when they cry out to Hashem, it's much more severe. Hashem listens to them much more, so they're the ones who get who are taken advantage of by these kinds of things. So therefore, Hashem is more going to take it out on such people. So Oitzrei Peres Kegoin Man. So the Gemara says, what's an example of Oitzrei Peres? What's an example that we're familiar with of Oitzrei Peres? Amar Rav Yochanan Ken Shabsoi Oitzrei Peres. For example, there was a fellow in those times named Shabsoi who would do just that. He would hoard produce, he'd corner the market and buy up as much as he could, so that when there were shortages, he can sell to the poor people and charge them larger prices. As opposed to, Rashbam says, now you can have, if he's hoarding it when prices are cheap, and then when prices go up, he's going to sell it to them at the cheaper prices, that can actually be, that it does cause prices to rise a little, but on the other hand, it's a good thing, because he's making it, but then the fakert, he's preventing shortages. This Shabsoi Otsaperi, the Gemara mentions in Yuma, that one time, the Gemara mentions that there was a woman who one time on Yom Kippur, she was having a craving for food, and they asked Rebbe what to do. He says, whisper in her ear, now it's Yom Kippur, and now see if that calms down the baby. And then the Gemara says, there were two such pregnant women. One of them, right away, the cravings calmed down. Rebbe said, I see that baby has the potential to be a great tzaddik, and that was Rebbe Yechon. The other one, though, did not, and therefore that means not he's necessarily going to be a Rosha, tzaddik or Rosha Lekamer, but he has a propensity to become a Rosha, and that became the Shabsai Otsateri.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chav Gimel Adar Aleph. There's a letter from the Rebbe says there's a letter from the Minchas Elazar that had been reprinted at that time in Tavshin Dalad Mem that he says very clearly and unequivocally that we need Mesiras Nefesh to bring Mashiach Tzidkenu. This Mesiras Nefesh is like the kind of Mesiras Nefesh for the big three for Yehoreg Val Yaver. Chav Gimel Adar Beis. Our generation, the Rebbe talks about, has the responsibility to finish the birurim of Ikvus HaDimashicha and bring the Gilui of Mashiach L'matam HaSar HaTzvachim into Olam HaZeh HaGashmi. And then if a person will think about it for a little bit into these inyanim, it should make him fear and tremble, realizing that all these amazing, all these awesome things that Chazal talk about in Yonim Mashiach and the Gilui of that time, all of it depends on our avodah. Continuing with Halachas of Tzitzit. Suppose that a person has an extra long talus. So he folds it in half and then puts it on. So what do you do? What are considered the corners? The original corners or the corners of where it's folded? So the Yesh Oimrim, there's actually a machlokas about it in the Gemara, in Menachos. So Yesh Oimrim, that what you should do is you put tzitzis on the corners that the way it is now when it's folded. So you would put two tzitzis on the real corners and two tzitzis on the areas where it's on the corners where it's folded. Because right now we're not talking about connecting it yet. Wait. See, we're talking about it's not connected, it's just folding. So yes, I mean that you would put that right now when you're wearing it, those function as the corners, then therefore that's where you would put the tzitzis. On the other hand, in the Gemara over there, Yesh Oimrim, and Reb Shimon says it in the Gemara, and the Poet and some Poskim, Paskim like him, that you would have to put it actually in the places where in the actual corners, because eventually it's going to be unfolded. You didn't sew it after all, so therefore don't put the tzitzis in the folded place, because then what's going to happen? You unfold it and they're going to be in the middle of the talus.
One second, if the first opinion says you put it on the corner, but where they are now, you have six corners.
No, so meaning it would mean you'd put it on, as we learned before, that a six-corner garment is still chayiv in tzitzis. You just put it on four of the corners, so what you would do is you'd put on two of the original corners and two of the folded corners. Now, it's not clear who the halacha is like, therefore a person should be careful not to wear such a thing unless he sews it. Now, he doesn't have to sew it completely up both open sides, it's enough if he sews it from one side, because now it can't be unfolded anymore, therefore at that point for sure you can put tzitzit on the corners of the fold, because right now those are the corners, and since it's sewn, it's going to remain that way.